The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome, any students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman, joined by my co-host today, Trey Oldenburg. Trey, we have an interesting trade to talk about in the NBA, and then we're going to talk about the new schedules with the SEC, and they released the times a couple weeks ago. So we're going to go through Alabama and Auburn and then discuss some difficult schedules we see throughout the SEC, because there's not going to be an easy schedule in the conference at all. There's no Alabama or Auburn have an easy schedule. Every team in the conference is going to have to be battle-tested, battle it out to get to the college football playoff. Yeah. Let's start with the NBA, because it's just one little trade here. I say little, but you look at it as its entirety. The Memphis Grizzlies traded Desmond Bain to the Orlando Magic for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony, four unprotected first-round picks and one first-round pick swap. Those four unprotected first-round picks include the number 16 pick in this upcoming draft, a 2026 first-rounder, which includes swap rights with the Phoenix Suns or Washington Wizards, 2028 and 2030 unprotected first-round picks, and then the pick swap is top two protected in 2029. I'll ask you, Gray. But what are the Orlando Magic doing, and what are the Grizzlies doing?
Well, the Orlando Magic, what they're doing is blowing up their future to try and win now. They're a team that, since the Dwight Howard days, have not been a consistent playoff team. But with them competing much better this past year, obviously Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, they do have a really good young core. They're trying to get another guy in there to take them from a play-in or a low East seed in the playoffs to one of the teams competing for an Eastern Conference championship and getting to their finals. Because obviously you see how open the Eastern Conference is. We saw the Indiana Pacers in the finals this year. So the Eastern Conference is open. So I think the Magic are trying to take advantage of that. But by doing that, they're blowing up their future. Pretty much. I mean, four unprotected first round picks. That's crazy, including this year's pick, which is the number 16 pick in the upcoming 2025 draft. And then also getting rid of a guy like Cole Anthony, guys like Kentavious Caldwell, a veteran like Kentavious Caldwell Pope. They are in the win now scenario. And I think the Grizzlies are in the scenario of, Desmond Bain didn't really help them win or lose this year. So they see, I guess we'll take four unprotected first-round picks for this guy. It's not going to hurt the Grizzlies at all. But what the Grizzlies now can do is shift their focus to whether they want to build around John Morant, whether they want to build around Jaren Jackson, maybe move on from one of those two guys. But then also after that, they've got draft capital now, not only for them, but also for the Magic. So I think it sets up the Grizzlies pretty well for the future. They just got to capitalize on it and move on. But the Magic now, in a win now scenario, they're in they need to be a top four seed in the East next year and be competing to get to the NBA Finals.
It was a interesting trade, to say the least. You look at the Luka trade midseason when the Lakers were able to acquire him for just trading one first-round pick, and I understand that the Lakers also ended up trading Anthony Davis, who's one of the best players in the league, and if not the best rim protector in the league, outside of a guy like Rudy Gobert and another guy in Victor Wembanyama. Four first-round picks for Desmond Bain is a lot, but you talked about it a little bit, Gray. The Magic realized this is a win-now mode. You don't have time to wait around for one or two of those first-round picks you traded to figure it out. You have to win now. The Eastern Conference is wide open. The Indiana Pacers are in the NBA Finals. The Celtics look like they're going to be turning towards making some big changes here and there. The Milwaukee Bucks are in flux with Damian Lillard's injury and Giannis. Is it going to stay, go? What's that franchise look building around him? The New York Knicks fired their head coach after making the Eastern Conference Finals. There might be some changes roster-wise, too. And the Magic are in a position where you have a budding superstar in Paolo Banchero, a good second, maybe third option in Franz Wagner. You dismiss that third option in the playoffs. You saw when Franz Wagner was struggling or Paolo Banchero was getting doubled in the post. there wasn't that third option to come in and say, okay, let me give you 20 points consistently on a nightly basis. Desmond Bane gives you that option. He's a great scorer, but he's also a great three-point shooter, shot above 40% on standstill three-pointers last year for the Grizzlies. And when you have a guy like Paolo Banchero, who's more of a back-to-the-basket type big, similar to like a guy in Pascal Siakam for the Indiana Pacers, he loves to get in that low post and sort of work down low. So you want to have a guy like Desmond Bane to space the floor around him to give him the opportunity to get down the low post and bang down low and have the option to spray it out to Desmond Bane, being a high volume and really great three-point shooter. So getting Desmond Bane is the perfect piece alongside Paolo Banchero, but it's going to come down to what do the pieces look alongside Banchero, Wagner, and Bane. We know Suggs dealt with an injury towards the end of last year. Wendell Carter Jr., can he do it? Mortiz, Wagner, Franz's brother. They have some young pieces there. And the Magic, I would expect them to be more aggressive in free agency and probably on the trade market going forward after making this trade. Even though they don't have that many first-round picks left, they'll still be uber-aggressive to continue to build this roster. Because like we both said, they're realizing it's win-now mode and they have to do it. And this was the trade that they decided was going to be the one. And then the Grizzlies, this signals to me that they're in a retooling, maybe even a rebuilding mode. Ja Morant dealt with injuries last year. We know all the off-the-court stuff he's dealt with in his time in the NBA with the guns and all that stuff. Jaren Jackson Jr., he's been the most healthy mainstay guy there for the Grizzlies. You had a pretty good rookie last year in Jalen Wells. You got him in the second round. Scottie Pippen Jr., the backup point guard. Well, remains to be seen what he's going to be like with the Grizzlies, if he's going to have a future with the franchise. But the Grizzlies have a situation here where you trade maybe your second or third best player for two guys that more than likely aren't going to contribute a whole lot. KCP had a pretty rough year last year. Cole Anthony has not been what he was expected to be coming into the NBA. And of course, the first four first-round picks that are unprotected in the pick swap are great. But it's a situation kind of like we talked about with the Magic, where you're not going to you have a roster where you don't have the time to wait around and pray that one of those first-round picks pans out in the 2-3 years he takes to develop. You need to win now with a guy like Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. It might be a time for we see Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. out the door. That's a decision they're also going to have to make. Is you trade away Desmond Bane, Ja Morant's going to have to be extended here soon. Same with Jaren Jackson. I think Jaren Jackson's up this offseason. Yeah. So decisions for the Memphis Grizzlies and a very tough Western Conference, a lot different than the Eastern Conference, where it's kind of – the Eastern Conference is there's question marks left and right. In the Western Conference, you have a handful of teams that it's easily identifiable. Those are going to be the teams that are going to contend year after year. Thunder, Lakers, Nuggets. That's really the main three, I think, of the Timberwolves, of course, making back-to-back conference finals. But this trade in general signifies two things: Magic, their win now, and then the Grizzlies retooling, maybe rebuilding, depending on what they do with Jaren Jackson Jr.'s contract and trading Ja or keeping him long term. But interesting trade nonetheless for the Magic and the Grizzlies to start the offseason when the NBA Finals are still going on.
That's right.
We'll cover that when those finals wrap up. We'll have a whole show with hopefully Nathan Glidewell here because his Thunder are in it to talk about what occurred with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Gray, let's talk about the SEC football schedules.
Yeah.
They released times, like I said, when we started the show a couple weeks ago, the time slots. We had the schedule in its entirety, but we're still waiting on the time slots and what that was going to look like for Alabama, Auburn, and the entire SEC. Looking at Auburn's schedule, start out with Baylor at 7 p.m. on Fox on a Friday. Weird, weird thing. We have high school football around here, and a lot of coaches have been moving their games from that Friday night to the Thursday night so they can go in and either watch or attend Auburn's game against Baylor. I know it's on the road, but still, diehard Auburn fans are going to want to go to that game. Then you play Ball State at 6:30, South Alabama at 11:45, have a flex against Oklahoma, an afternoon slot against Texas A&M, a night game versus Georgia at Auburn, beneficial for Auburn. Then you take on Missouri as a flex slot. Arkansas as an early slot. Kentucky as a flex. Vanderbilt as an afternoon. trying to get that Diego Pavia get back. Then Mercer at 1 p.m. and then Flex, Alabama. The early windows that I mentioned, that's between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m., so that'll just be decided at that point. The afternoons are 2:30 to 3:30. The night windows are 6 to 7, and then the Flexes are anytime between 2:30 and 7 o'clock. You look at the schedule, Gray, what is Auburn's outlook going into this season, seeing the time slots and where these games are going to be played?
I think it's a real advantage. You look at those away games outside of Baylor, there are no night away games. And that's something that, you know, is nice to avoid, especially playing in the SEC, no matter who you're going to play. But being able to kind of see if you could stay away from that Oklahoma night game, definitely staying away from the Texas A&M night game, that's going to be super nice. But then you look at the home slots, you got a lot of flex spots, obviously. But the big one that everybody wants to talk about is that I believe it's week six. If I'm wrong, I think it's either week five or week six against Georgia at night. And it'll be the first time since 2012 that Auburn hosted Georgia at night. And only will be the third time this century. The time before that was the year 2000. So 2000, 2012, and 2025, Auburn has hosted Georgia at night in Jordan-Hare Stadium. And obviously that's a game that Auburn has not beaten Georgia since 2017. That is one that I want more than absolutely any of them, no doubt. That'll be exciting. And then all your those silly non-conference games, it's just random time, you know, 1 o'clock with Mercer, 11:45 South Alabama, 6:30 for the kickoff in Jordan-Hare against Ball State after that Baylor game in week one. It'll be interesting. I think Auburn's got a schedule that really works for them. I think they've got a schedule that we're going to know what this Auburn team is very early. If we don't figure it out against Baylor, you'll definitely figure it out against Oklahoma or Texas A&M before the bye week, before you play Georgia. One note on that Georgia game that I did want to add is the week before the Georgia game, Auburn has a bye week after they come back from the road trips out to Oklahoma and Texas A&M. Auburn have a bye week. Georgia hosts Alabama the week before they come to Jordan-Hare to play at night. That's just something that is interesting. Obviously, momentum's a huge aspect that can go in Georgia's favor there. But rest is definitely an advantage of Auburn. Don't want Georgia to get too hyped up in that Alabama game when they host them. They're trying to get revenge on Alabama from the year prior. But now they're going to have to worry about Auburn and Jordan-Hare at night. And, you know, there's just like Nick Saban said, that place is haunted, especially when the lights come on. It'll be super fun. I'm excited for this season. Right now, I'm still at 8-4 because I want to say 7-5, but I'm struggling to get five losses. But we're really going to know a lot at that Friday night game at Baylor. That's a tough game. Sawyer Robertson, I got a couple good backs. Dave Aranda, the defensive-minded head coach, they're going to be prepared. That's a blackout game at night on a Friday night, national television. So we're really going to find out a lot about this Auburn team in that game. But if you're able to go and beat Baylor week one, start off 1-0, come back, beat Ball State, beat South Alabama, then you're 3-0 going to Texas A&M or Oklahoma. You win, even if you win one of your next three games with Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and then Georgia at night at home, you're set up really, really well, because then the rest of the schedule, you're talking about home against Missouri, home against Kentucky, at Arkansas, at Vandy. I say at Vandy, but that'll be a home game. Mercer and then Alabama at home. It's hard to find two losses in that group right now for me. So I think Auburn's set up really well to kind of get back on track. And it's a win now scenario for Hugh Freeze and this Auburn team.
So 8-4 is the floor. What do you think the ceiling is with the schedule and the times you got?
10-2. This team's talented enough to make the college football playoff. I think they're talented enough to win the national championship and go win an SEC championship and go undefeated. No, I don't. I don't think they're deep enough for that. I think there are teams in the not only teams in the country like the Ohio States and the Notre Dames, maybe Penn States and Tech and stuff like that, but there's teams in the SEC that have been building for more than 3 years, especially at positions of need. You know, this Auburn offensive line is by far the best Auburn offensive line we've seen since probably 2013. PFF has them ranked as a top 10 offensive line in the country, which is just bananas, considering Gus Malzahn didn't recruit offensive tackles, didn't know how to, and the entire tenure of Brian Harsin, Auburn signed two offensive linemen. Hugh Freeze has immediately come in and flipped that and turned this offensive line, starting with the flip of Connor Liu, the starting Auburn starting center from Miami to Auburn, just a few weeks after Hugh Freeze was hired. And then you talk about the flip of Kay and Lee, and you talk about the flip of Keldrick Falk. You think about the impact those three guys made in Hugh Freeze getting those guys just a few weeks into his Auburn tenure. And then that obviously that 24 class was huge, 2025 classes in, but they're still not at the level depth-wise that Alabama is, that Georgia is, that Texas is, that, you know, that even like Florida. I wouldn't even call Florida even at the level that Florida is. But talent-wise, at the top, in the one deep, maybe in the two deep, they are. They just have to get to the point where they're year in, year out with those top 10 recruiting classes, those top 10 to 15 transfer portal classes, filling positions of need, and then you just got to execute on the football field. Auburn went 5-7 last year. In five of those seven losses, it was a one-score game going into the fourth quarter. And in three of those five games, Auburn had more than four turnovers. It just wasn't executed last year. A lot of that had to do with the play calling. A lot of that had to do with the quarterback position. A lot of that had to do with miscues. A lot of that had to do with, last year, the defense wasn't as deep. It was also a first year of Derek Nix and DJ Durkin. You get both of those guys back. It's the first continuity of both the coordinators at Auburn since early 2010s, I believe. So that is huge moving forward, especially for execution standards. And if you say a few plays go a different way for Auburn last year, Auburn's 8-4, 9-3, probably just below the South Carolina, Alabama, Ole Miss, Miami teams in that playoff hunt. And it looks completely different. Everybody thinks of Auburn as completely different. Well, this team is considerably better on paper than last year's team. No doubt. Had another top 10 transfer portal class, had another top 10 recruiting class. This team is considerably better. Now you just got to execute it on the field. I think this year's schedule lines up just as good, if not better, than last year's schedule, especially getting Alabama and Georgia at home. And then who you go to on the road, not going to or not having Cal come in, not having five straight home games, I think is good. I think the bye week before Georgia sits perfectly. You're going to know a lot about your team really early in the season. I think just the way the schedule works out, and then that middle section after the Georgia game, where you're Arkansas, Kentucky, Missouri, Vandy, Mercer. If you go 5-0 in that, well, there are other wins out there, like a South Alabama, like Ball State. You win one of those, Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, Texas, A&M. Well, there you are. You're already at 8. Now what? You win in two of those games, then you're 9-3. So we will see. It makes sense on paper that this team will improve. It just has to be done execution-wise. A lot of that's going to be through Freeze, through the offense, through whoever the starting quarterback is, whether it's Jackson Arnold, Ashton Daniels, Deuce Knight, whoever it is, and just improving the execution aspect limiting turnovers, and you're fine. You got the talent to do it. You just got to do it at this point. It's win now for Hugh Freeze.
Well, there's one player that's not on Auburn's team anymore that cost them a lot of those one-score games. Great Peyton Thorne is not there anymore. Yeah. Oklahoma quarterback Jackson Arnold transferred there in the offseason. Big upgrade. Even Deuce Knight would be a big upgrade from Peyton Thorne. So glad to have some difference at quarterback after the last two seasons of utter crap at that position. Yeah. To keep it PG. There are probably more choice words Auburn sure. fans could use for Peyton Thorne and what he did the 2 years he was with the program. Let's flip over to the cross-state rival in the Alabama Crimson Tide and their schedule with the times that got released, starting with at Florida State at 2:30, ULM at 6:45, Wisconsin at 11 a.m., at Georgia at 6:30, Vanderbilt in a flex slot, at Missouri at 11 a.m., Tennessee in a flex spot, at South Carolina flex, LSU night game. Thank God that's at Alabama, not LSU. Oklahoma flex spot, Eastern Illinois at 1 p.m., and then at Auburn flex. Gray, as the resident Alabama hater, do you think this schedule is more manageable than last year, not only in regards to the home and away matchups, but also year two under Kalen DeBoer and not having Jalen Milroe at quarterback, kind of like Auburn had to deal with Peyton Thorne?
Yeah, you know, now that I think about it, it's very similar. You know, Alabama's going to be breaking in a new quarterback just like Auburn. You're going to find out a lot about that new quarterback and how this is in year two of Kalen DeBoer very early in this schedule with Florida State. And if you don't find it out with Florida State, you'll find it out with Wisconsin or Georgia. So it's very similar to kind of the way Auburn's is laid out. I think with Kalen DeBoer, he came in and kind of not wanted to run Nick Saban's type system because he had Nick Saban's players, but that's kind of what was left with him. And I think Alabama fans need to give Kalen DeBoer at least two more years before they start seeing anything different than what we saw at the end of Nick Saban's tenure, because the type of players that he's going to be bringing in, the type of transfer talent that I think Alabama needs to adjust to, that Alabama really benefited from in the early years of the transfer portal, but now has not attacked as well, and it tried to attack more of high school recruiting, which is definitely the way to go. But yeah, you know, I think attacking the positions of need is something that every SEC team is going to have to use the transfer portal with in the near future. But Alabama's one of, if not the most talented team in the SEC because of what they've done recruiting. And they will continue to do that under Kalen DeBoer. That's not going to change because who the head coach is. That's a brand thing. That's not a coaching thing. For me, it really just does come down to the quarterback. Is Ty Simpson a good enough quarterback to get the ball to Alabama's playmakers, which Alabama has a ton of? And it just if Ty Simpson is Jake Coker, or if he is half of A.J. McCarron or Greg McElroy or somebody like that, Alabama's going to make the college football playoff, 100%, 100%. Their defense is good enough. Their schedule works out good enough. They've got the playmakers on the offensive end. All they have to do is have a game manager at quarterback. Now, if you have a difference maker at quarterback, the sky's the limit for this Alabama team because their talent and the type of coaching, the offensive play calling that they're going to have, bringing Ryan Grubb in. Kalen DeBoer, who originally wanted to bring him in for year one, it didn't work out, but now he's back. That's just another brain that's just as smart as Kalen DeBoer on that offensive end. The plays aren't going to change. The play calling isn't going to be different, but that's another guy to be in the room that's absolutely huge that knows Kalen DeBoer's system. But is Ty Simpson the quarterback like Jake Coker, like AJ McCarron kind of was, like Greg McElroy was, where, you know, it doesn't matter the quarterback. You know, it doesn't matter. If Ty Simpson has a 3-1 or better touchdown to interception ratio, Alabama's going to be competing for the SEC championship and they're going to the college football playoff. If it's worse, there's going to be issues. If it's worse, we need to see somebody like Keelan Russell be given a shot. And it's the exact same way with Auburn. If Jackson Arnold has a 3-1 or better, Auburn's going to be competing in every single game that they're in. If it's worse, then we probably need to see Deuce Knight on the field. So it's the exact same thing. The schedules are very similar. I think with Alabama, the only thing you don't like about the schedule is the going to Georgia and the going to Auburn. That's the only thing you shouldn't like about the schedule for Alabama. I love that Florida State is an afternoon game if I'm an Alabama fan, 100%, especially with the type of talent that they brought into the transfer portal and the type of revenge that they're going to be wanting after their god-awful season last year, going 2-10. My goodness, that was terrible. And then you bring in LSU at home and you bring in Tennessee at home. That's all you can ask for if you're an Alabama fan. Now it just comes down to the quarterback position and executing, unlike some of the time where Jalen Milroe was quarterback last year. Because, you know, last year was a big what if for Alabama, to be honest. Even as an outsider looking in, I was just like, man, what if Jalen Milroe didn't turn the ball over that many times against Oklahoma? Or he just did this play differently in the Tennessee game? And it's just like, what if they did this? Set up this game plan for this game. What if they kept doing this for this? And it was just way too many what ifs. If Alabama has a game manager at quarterback this year, whether Ty Simpson is better than a game manager, there's not going to be those what ifs because the talent around him is remarkable at Alabama. From what Nick Saban left to what Kalen DeBoer has brought in and kept. Alabama should be competing for a national championship this year. It's just about executing it the right way, breaking in a new quarterback in a very tough SEC schedule. It's tough. You just got to execute it the right way.
If you're Kalen DeBoer, you couldn't have asked for an easier schedule in year two. And I understand it's not easy in the sense where you got to play some pretty difficult teams, but in the grand landscape of the SEC, you talked about it, Gray, only going to Georgia, going to Missouri, and going to South Carolina. That's huge. Georgia is going to be difficult, especially being at night. But South Carolina and Missouri don't pose that big of a threat with their stadium atmospheres. And Auburn's going to be difficult, of course, but Alabama's accustomed to going in there. But you don't have to go to LSU as a night game. You don't have to go to Oklahoma, who Oklahoma could be a scary team this year with what they brought in, John Mateer, Jaden Ott, the defense they've returned. They could be a scary team, and not having to go there is huge. We saw last year the atmosphere impact it had on a guy like Jalen Milroe. And when you're breaking in a new quarterback like a Ty Simpson, or for that point in the season, if it's a Keelan Russell or an Austin Mack, avoiding going to those difficult road environments is going to be huge. You end the season with Auburn, but you still avoid going to LSU and Oklahoma in Tennessee, those type of atmospheres where the fans are not going to be showing a whole lot of love to you, and the atmosphere is going to be a lot more hatred and pretty rowdy. Not to take away from what South Carolina and Missouri have, but it's nothing in comparison to some of these other programs that Bama would play. You kind of talked about Ty Simpson and him being a game manager, and you compare him to guys like Greg McElroy, AJ McCarron, Jake Coker. If he can be that type of quarterback, Alabama will be successful. The one thing I worry about with Alabama is the rushing attack, because you talk about Jake Coker and Greg McElroy and AJ McCarron. They all had Heisman contenders at running backs, first round picks. Jane Miller is a great running back, and Richard Young, he's talented. The Louisiana transfer can be that guy, a 1,000-yard rusher last year. You bring in a couple other freshman running backs. But is there a Mark Ingram, a Trent Richardson, an Eddie Lacy, a Derrick Henry, even a TJ Yeldon or Kenyon Drake type player on this roster? There was tons of games last year where the leading rusher for the team was Jalen Milroe.
Yeah.
And I understand that a lot of that had to do with the scheme and Jalen Milroe not understanding how to use the read option effectively and just pulling it because he felt like he could do more with his legs. I just worry if Ty Simpson is only a game manager, there's not going to be something to fall back on because all the weapons are on the offensive line and in the receiving room. Ryan Williams, Jeremy Bernard in the receiving room, Isaiah Horton, the Miami transfer, and the offensive line, Caden Proctor, Jaden Roberts, Parker Brailsford, and then whoever slots in at left guard and right tackle right now looks like Cam Dewberry, the A&M transfer, and Malcolm Formby, who Nathan is just a huge fan of after watching him play against USF. That's just my worry if Ty Simpson is only a game manager. Ty Simpson's going to have to be a way better game manager, or you're going to have to get something out of your running backs that we didn't see last year. That's going to be the huge thing for Alabama going forward. And in the schedule, you have to handle business. I see the floor being 9-3. That should be the floor for if you're Kalen DeBoer. Anything less than that, you're going to be on the hot seat going into year three. 9-3 more than likely gets you into the college football playoff, unless it's just three terrible losses.
Yeah.
The ceiling, I don't want to say undefeated. That's just that's bonkers. With the schedule they have, I see one loss at the very least. At the very least. So Alabama, tough schedule ahead, but you have a lot of beneficial home and away matchups where you avoid having to go to places like LSU at night and Tennessee, and then you don't have to play Florida State at night at Florida State. That's a big one too, Gray, you talked about.
Yeah, 100%.
Talking less about Alabama and Auburn, Gray, there's not going to be an easy schedule, so we're not going to spend any time on that. But who has a difficult schedule? Who has the toughest schedule in the SEC outside of Alabama and Auburn?
Well, there's three that I've just looked at, and I'm just like, oh, gosh, I would not want to be them. Florida, Mississippi State, and Oklahoma all just blare at you because it's like they got so unlucky with their draw in the SEC, and they have – you know, really tough non-conference opponents as well. I'll say Florida. I'm going to mention Mississippi State and Oklahoma, and I'll let you decide for you, Alex. But I'm going to say Florida. Look, Florida's non-conference, Long Island, that doesn't matter, Miami and Florida State. That's tough already, all right? So then we talk about what they bring in the SEC. Oh, goodness. Texas, Tennessee, they got road trips at Oxford, road trips to LSU, a road trip to Texas A&M, obviously the Jacksonville trip against Georgia. That is a really brutal schedule, and it is win now for Billy Napier and DJ Lagway as a – what is he? A true sophomore. That is a huge start to that schedule. And we talked about their schedule last year and how, you know, crazy it would be if they even won, you know, five games. They ended up winning a lot of games because DJ Lagway turned in to be the quarterback that they expected to be. He's coming off an injury. How healthy is he going to be for that Miami game specifically? You know, and then how do they keep going? It's just – that one is just – insane to me. And then I did want to mention Mississippi State. I mean, 0-8 in the SEC last year. Poor guys. I really do feel bad for Mississippi State because they draw Georgia, Texas, Tennessee, and Ole Miss at home. Then they've got to travel to Florida, Missouri, Arkansas, and Texas A&M. And then they also play last year's college football playoff team, Arizona State, and bring Sam Levitt into Starkville. Like that's nine games where I could see Mississippi State losing this year. Just the ones that I read, you know, and it's not a team that brought back a lot from last year. That may be a good thing. That may be a bad thing. Who knows? Jeff Lebby's got to get it going at Mississippi State. I just don't know if this is the year to do it. So it'll be tough for sure, for sure. And then I got one more. Oklahoma is really tough as well, because they also with a tough non-conference team, non-conference game, they draw Michigan. But then they have road trips to South Carolina, Alabama, and Tennessee. And then they host Ole Miss, LSU, Missouri, and Auburn. And then that neutral site game against Texas at the Cotton Bowl. So that's another tough one as well. It just depends on which way you want to look at it. If you want to say, like, the toughest schedule is probably the team that's going to lose the most, I would probably say Mississippi State, because they're not as good as Oklahoma and Florida. But I think Florida's schedule is the toughest, just because who they draw at home and who they also play in their non-conference with Florida State and every year, obviously, and then Miami.
I was going to say Oklahoma. Oklahoma has a top five roster talent-wise. John Mateer at quarterback, Jaden Ott at running back, have a couple other guys behind Jaden Ott. You got some uber-talented receivers who couldn't stay healthy last year. You could just go back and look at the injury reports, and it was just like
it was
healthy. It was healthy at receiver.
They're going to play defensive backs at wide receiver last year.
And they lose Danny Stutzman at linebacker, who was the heart and soul of that team. They have some guys that can help alleviate that loss a little bit. Kendall Daniels, Kip Lewis got that pick six against Jalen Milroe when, for some reason, he's throwing an out route to Robbie Utes. Still haunts me to this day what we're doing at that point in the game. And then in the DBs, you got a guy in Eli Bowen, brother of Peyton Bowen, younger brother. He was a true freshman last year and absolutely lit it up. Defensive line-wise, you got R. Mason Thomas, maybe if not one of the best defensive linemen in the SEC going into 2025. You bring in Marvin Jones Jr., the Florida State and Georgia transfer, so you have a guy to put alongside R. Mason Thomas. The roster is top five talent-wise, but the schedule, it's hard to
easily see them going 6-6.
It's easy to see them going 6-6, but then it's also seeing – I look at 12-0 or 11-1.
Yeah,
it's just what Oklahoma do we get? Do we get the Oklahoma that ended last year and beat Alabama, or do we get the Oklahoma that just fell asleep at points last year and had to play Michael Hawkins Jr. at quarterback because Jackson Arnold struggled so much?
Yeah.
That's the worry for me, is what Oklahoma do we get in those big moments? Because you look at their schedule, you talked about it a little bit, Gray, but in a four-week span – you start with Texas, neutral site, go to South Carolina, host Ole Miss, and then go to Tennessee. So you play two teams that made the college football playoff and two teams that arguably should have made the college football playoff last year in South Carolina and Ole Miss. That four-week stretch.
You didn't even mention Michigan and Auburn and Alabama. And oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the only saving grace for them is Alabama comes after a bye. And that – I mean, Tennessee bye week, then Alabama, then Missouri, and then last game of the year is LSU. Again, if they had an easier schedule, I would sit here and tell you I see Oklahoma as a top five team in the country. Because I saw what John Mateer did at Washington State last year. I saw what Jaden Ott did at California. And granted, those weren't against great opponents at certain points. But we saw the potential they had. We saw what R. Mason Thomas did last year against the SEC, what Eli Bowen did as a freshman. The talent is there. It's the schedule, and can Oklahoma get through it?
Yeah, it's a great point.
I don't know. I'm not a big believer in Brent Venables. He has struggled mightily at Oklahoma, especially with the talent he's brought in, a five-star quarterback in Jackson Arnold and some of the other talent defensively. I just worry with him as the head coach and the schedule he's got going forward, can he get this team to the college football playoff? Because he should.
He's got to get that offense. Yeah, he has got to get that offense in the right spot. You know, everybody dogs on what happened to Jackson Arnold and Michael Hawkins last year, but you mentioned it earlier, they didn't have wide receivers. They also didn't have an offensive line. They're for the almost back half of their entire schedule, four of their starting offensive linemen that they started week one were all out for the year. Not only did that happen, they had two offensive coordinators over the course of the offseason because Jeff Lebby left. And when you have a defensive-minded head coach like Brett Venables, you've got to have an offensive coordinator that completely leads that offense and coaches the quarterbacks. Well, they didn't have that at Oklahoma last year, and that schedule was tough anyway with, you know, the Tennessee at home, going to Auburn, you know, with the Alabama late in the season, you know, still having to play Texas every year, the LSU. That was already tough anyway. And then it just – the injuries blew it up, and it was turnovers, and it was missed assignments, it was miscommunications. Well, now you've got a true NFL quarterback in there with John Mateer, and a true NFL running back in there with Jaden Ott. And just like you were mentioning, Alex, talent all over the field. That offense has got to score points. They got to score points. The only reason they beat Alabama is because Jalen Milroe threw it to Oklahoma. The only reason they beat Auburn is because Peyton Thorne threw it to Oklahoma. They've got to score offensively. They can do that. Got to stay healthy, number one. I mean, that is the most important thing for Oklahoma this year, no doubt, because of what we saw last year. But they've also got to execute offensively, turnover-free. And I'm not saying John Mateer needs to throw zero interceptions all year. But, you know, I was talking about Ty Simpson earlier, and as I was talking about Jackson Arnold with Auburn and Alabama, those guys, if they have 3-1 touchdown-interception ratios, Auburn and Alabama are going to be pretty good. John Mateer, if he has 3-1, with that schedule, I don't know. They could. You're going to need a lot out of Jaden Ott. But at Oklahoma, the type of quarterbacks that they've had, the type of statistical seasons that they've had at quarterback recently, what they were going to need from a quarterback, from a running back, with an offense or a defensive-minded head coach like Brett Venables, if Mateer didn't have a 4-1 touchdown interception ratio, I don't know how good Oklahoma's going to be. But just like you said, Alex, I could easily see them going maybe 5-7 with that schedule. I could easily see them going 12-0 because they are unbelievably talented, unbelievably experienced. And Venables, I'm not saying Venables is a bad coach, but I'm saying Venables is not the right offensive coach for this team. But it's got to work because it is a win-now scenario for Oklahoma. Joining the SEC this past year, joining, you know, getting this type of transfer talent, it's a win-now. It's win-now. And that schedule is not built for a win-now season, but it's what you get when you come to the SEC. Welcome to the club.
So goes the SEC. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.